If you'd like to listen to our podcasts without ads, please consider becoming a member. In addition to no ads, members receive bonus content for virtually all of our shows, an invitation to join the DSR Slack community, access to our Discord community, enhanced show notes for select shows, and more. For this week only, get 50% off the first year or the first month of membership. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and use code ECLIPSE to receive the discount. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code ECLIPSE. Thank you very much for your support.
Hello and welcome to DSR Daily. I'm one of your hosts, David Rothkopf, joined by your other host, Chris Cottmeyer. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Excellent. And Riley Fessler, how are you today, Riley?
Pretty well.
Fresh off the Cherry Blossom 5K in Washington, D.C. You are glowing with good health, Riley. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Do you have the energy to do this podcast?
Oh, in spades, David, in spades. Okay.
Well, he didn't stop there either. He was walking like a mofo on Saturday. He did like 3 1.5 mile walks after he ran.
Yeah.
That sounds like what you do every day, Chris.
No.
I now share my activities with Chris on Apple so he knows that I'm being healthy. He's my accountability.
Wait a second. You share the biofeedback part of your Apple Watch that goes to Chris?
No, it just shows activities. So he knows that I'm
working. It just says he completed a 5K run or 3.1 miles or whatever. It doesn't like say.
He's like my Mike Johnson. Instead of if I'm watching porn, it's if I'm working out.
Wow. That is like Mike Johnson. And you're just like Chris's kid. That's fantastic. All right. What's the first story, Chris?
U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen warned China against decimating new industries with excessive imports, citing past negative impacts like the China shock, which cost millions of American jobs. Despite not threatening new tariffs, she expressed strong opposition to China's state-supported flooding of global markets with cheap products in sectors like green energy. Yellen's visit to China aimed to address issues of overinvestment and excess industrial capacity, with discussions held with top Chinese officials to foster cooperation on financial stability. Do you think this is going to have any impact on China's production? And why would you think that Janet Yellen wouldn't have threatened tariffs? Is it too early for that?
Well, first of all, the important part of the story is that Janet Yellen went, that we're continuing contacts. There's coordination between the two most important economies in the world. And most of the important stuff that's involved in that coordination is happening off camera. There are things that each side has to say on camera. It's a little bit like Kabuki theater. They're not going to change their plans based on this. But she has to be seen to be saying this because of political reasons back home. I suppose if all the world says this every time they meet with the Chinese and then they insist behind the scenes on some negotiations, it would have an effect. But the reality is, I don't think that's what's important here. I do think that the key thing is she's gone back and that this is a conscious effort on the part of the Biden administration to move away from the Cold War footing that the two countries seem to be on at the outset of this administration. It's one other thing I'd like to bring up here. Decimating has a specific meaning, and people don't use it properly in journalism or in daily life. Decimating is a word that goes back to the Latin, which means for destroying one-tenth of another side's army. So when you decimate something, you only destroy a tenth of the army. It's meant as a kind of metric for a strong blow against another army. And I just thought I should put that out there. It's so that if anybody in the audience is ever writing an email or a text to us here at the DSR Network, which we love, you don't misuse the word decimating. Riley?
So Slovakia had a presidential election over the weekend, and unfortunately, Peter Pellegrini, who is a pro-Russia candidate, claimed victory with 53% of the vote, which has been a pretty big strengthening of Russia-friendly political forces. He's an ally of the populist Prime Minister Robert Fico, and his opponent was a staunch supporter of Ukraine and critic of Fico. So it's a pretty significant shift, as the outgoing president, Kaputova, was a pro-Western and kind of anti-Fico politician. So it's definitely a consolidation of the pro-Russia forces in Slovakia, and there's kind of fears that this will mean that there's another Hungary in the EU to kind of stymie Ukrainian support. So not a great result.
Not a great result. This is, you know, one of the stories we're watching this year is whether the sort of ethno-nationalist right-wing movement led by Putin, but including people like Orban and Trump and others, expands by the end of the year, or it contracts somewhat. This is a worrying development in that regard. Of course, the worst thing for Ukraine isn't this. It's that the United States Congress still hasn't approved aid for Ukraine, which it needs urgently. And that's something we should not lose sight of. Trump, Speaker Johnson, the MAGA Republicans are the ones who right now are undermining Ukraine at a moment of great vulnerability and could produce a strategic turnaround in that fight. And one of the great setbacks to a successful U.S. foreign policy that we've ever seen. And this is 100% on the ally of that new government in Slovakia, Donald Trump. Chris?
Israel has scaled back operations in Khan Yunis and Rafah. Move comes, of course, amid high civilian casualties that we've been reporting on since the beginning of this war. Ceasefire talks continue in Cairo. I can't, again, read whether this is a good development. I mean, scaling back operations to me means they've already, I don't want to use the word decimated, but they've already done significant damage to the point where they don't need to be there anymore. I just continue to be sickened by this whole war in Gaza, and my heart and prayers go out to the Palestinian people, because this is just it continues day after day after day after day. We report ceasefire talks in Cairo. We report some progress, but here we are, 6 months into the war.
I agree with you. There has been a fairly dramatic scaling down of Israeli troops in Gaza. I think they're down to one brigade size, a group of troops, 4,000, from a high that was perhaps as much as 30,000. And there is some expectation among some people, observers, that this may be a prelude to a sort of phase change in what's going on there, perhaps a ceasefire deal, perhaps a hostage deal. I think there has been perceptible a kind of increased sense of urgency about getting to that place from the Israeli government, especially since the attack that killed the 7 workers for World Central Kitchen. It's strange that such an attack would be the trigger, given the 33,000 other lives that have been lost in the course of this war, the 70,000 others who have been injured, the devastation that has been laid across all of Gaza. There's something fundamentally wrong, and I'm not minimizing the loss of life for World Central Kitchen, that it would take an attack that took a toll on a Western organization, Western people, and an organization led by a kind of high profile celebrity to bring a change in this war. But sadly, that's the way politics works. And that may be seen as a turning point. May not. You never know. There's a bunch of X factors out there, including what happens between Iran and Israel, what happens in Rafah. But our friend Noga Tarnopolsky earlier today ran a tweet in which she said there are rumors that some from Hamas are planning the day after a ceasefire to hold victory celebrations in Palestine, which in Gaza, which, to be honest, would be incredibly unhelpful and unconstructive. But I think it's important to remember that Hamas is a terrorist organization. That's what they do. And nobody, people who advocate for a strong Israeli response, people who feel that the Israeli response has been inhumane, I don't think there's much of a difference between most people who I hold either of those views with regard to Hamas. It needs to be taken off the stage as an actor. But we're at a delicate moment in that, and we will have to follow this very closely. Riley.
A Brazilian Supreme Court Justice, Alexandre de Moraes, has initiated an investigation into Elon Musk for potentially obstructing justice by refusing to comply with a court order to shut down X accounts for spreading disinformation. The investigation will look into charges of obstruction, criminal organization, and incitement by Musk, who publicly declared his intent to ignore the judicial directive, and it could lead to daily fines of nearly $20,000 per account for X if they reactivate them after they've been blocked. And this is just part of kind of, I think, a global push against big tech companies and Musk in particular for defying national governments. And I think we're really seeing a paradigm shift as countries start to crack down on these massive companies. And I think they've kind of gotten away with these kind of things for too long. So I'm hoping they're successful in this and that more will follow, especially against Musk, who is seemingly perpetually up to no good.
He really is. What a dick Musk is. But let's give Chris a chance. Typically, when these kind of cases are brought, Chris would like to stand up and defend big tech. So, you know, go on, Chris.
I have no defense for this.
Oh, good. So Musk was on Twitter yesterday saying that people in Brazil should use a VPN as a way of suggesting that, you know, he thought the Brazilian government was going to meddle with them and that he wanted to fight the meddling of the Brazilian government. I think the important thing to note here in this case is that what the Brazilian Supreme Court is looking at is obstruction of justice. And that's, you know, they would not be looking at that if they did not have some substantial evidence. This is, as you note, consistent with an effort among governments around the world to rein in big tech companies that they see as too powerful. That's a good thing, and it's overdue. Chris?
So in one weekend, first of all, I've experienced an earthquake for the first time in my life.
Oh, yeah, that was really close to your house.
Yeah.
I don't know how far. Lebanon, New Jersey must be like 10 miles from your house.
It's a little further. But even so, I was getting a haircut, and she luckily was just finished, you know, like doing the neck hair or whatever.
And yeah, no, it looks great.
Thanks. Yes. But today is, of course, eclipse day, and for now, the sun is out and shining. You'll hear this a million and one times, so we might as well say it too. Don't look directly into the sun. We have these...
You mean like Trump did?
Yes, exactly. We have these handy-dandy glasses, which will block the sun. Also, a good tip, I saw somebody posted on Twitter a question about whether they could point their cell phone at the sun, and would it be okay? And NASA responded and said, don't do that. It could fry your sensors. But what you can do is using those same glasses. You can essentially put them on your phone and take pictures of the eclipse. But it's an exciting day. In fact, when we taped yesterday, the Daily Blast, Greg Sargent was on his way to Ohio with his son to see the, you know, one of the prime viewing locations in the country. Lots of people are in Rochester. Kathy Hochul gave a big, you know, speech about
people in America are flooding the most boring parts of the country.
You got to go
because finally something interesting has happened.
Hey,
in Rochester and in Ohio.
Well, Kodak, it was in Rochester, so you know.
Yeah, and they're gone, right? That's not a thing anymore.
No. Anyway.
Well, thank you for that, Chris. Public service announcement. I think my sensors were fried long ago, and I have to be honest with you. I have no interest in the eclipse. None. You know, there are eclipses all the time. You know, you can go online, and there's one site that has every major solar eclipse for the next 1,000 years. So you can just see when they're all scheduled out there. You know, needless to say, the idiots of the world are always called out at times like these, and Marjorie Taylor Greene suggested that the confluence of the solar eclipse, which is just a, you know, result of the way the universe, you know, the solar system works, and the earthquake are a sign of, you know, the end times and, you know, of our guilt as a nation, and that, you know, some other wit suggested that if somebody had to be thrown into a volcano, it should be Marjorie Taylor Greene. And, you know, if only there were a volcano handy when you need one. But if you watch it, follow Chris's advice, and then with your sight still intact, you can come back here tomorrow and listen to the DSR Daily. And of course, we've got all of our DSR shows, including Above Average Intelligence, the Mothership, Deep State Radio, our political shows this week with Simon Rosenberg, who was in the New York Times last week, because mainly because he's on our podcast regularly, I guess. And we're All Gonna Die Radio, Words Matter, The Daily Blast, all that stuff each and every week. So enjoy it, and we'll enjoy being with you again when we are next. Until then, bye-bye.